Hello everyone, this is Dave Levinsky from Growth Inc., and today I'm really excited to be doing an interview with John Davies. John Davies is the founder and CEO of Merry Meeting, which owns and or has a majority interest in several service franchise businesses, and one of those businesses where John actually also serves as the CEO is Sunbelt, and you may know Sunbelt as the world's largest business brokerage firm. And other franchises that Merry Meeting owns and or has a majority interest include MTO Clean, which is a residential and commercial cleaning franchise with locations in 20 states, Inspect It First, which is a home inspection franchise, and Computer Troubleshooters, which is the world's number one computer service franchise with over 500 franchise locations in more than 20 countries. And now, obviously, with John's experience running Sunbelt and having acquired many of Merry Meeting's franchise businesses, he's clearly an expert in understanding the process of both buying and selling businesses. And in fact, John was the subject matter expert for the writing of the book, Selling Your Business for Dummies, by Wally Press. So, John, I'm really excited to speak with you today, and I appreciate you taking the time.
Well, great to be here. Yes.
Excellent. So, John, I wanted to focus on the topic of exit strategy planning, or, you know, what an entrepreneur or business owner should be doing now to ensure that they maximize the likelihood of successfully exiting and the price of successfully exiting their business in the future. And I wanted to sort of go through this great chart that you have on the Sunbelt website. And for those listening, it's sunbeltnetwork.com. And on that chart, you talk about two businesses and why one would sell for more than the other. And I want to go through some of these criteria that maybe you can comment on them and then talk about what else entrepreneurs should be doing to get their business ready for sale.
Okay.
Excellent. So one of the factors was the number of recurring customers. And one business that you mentioned here had 10 recurring customers and the other 50. Can you talk about how and why that's important?
Well, sure. I think any experienced buyer of businesses is looking for concentrations of risk or lack thereof. And obviously, the more revenue you're driving from a single customer relationship, the greater the likelihood that you could have a disruption in your flow of revenue because that customer decides to take their business elsewhere, the customer goes out of business, or they, for whatever reason, they don't need your services anymore. And dispersion of risk through dispersion, you know, more customers contributing a smaller percentage to total revenue is always a key that all buyers look for.
Okay, so you're looking for, so really this also goes to the next criteria, which is, you know, your largest customer and what percentage of sales. So when you're looking to build a business, you're saying that you really want more customers that with more customer lifetime value. Is that a correct statement?
Well, sure. I mean, I think if we all just kind of use our common sense for a minute, I think most people would say that 1,000 customers giving you $10 a day is better than one customer giving you $10,000 a day, because obviously at that point you're somewhat captive to that one large customer. And you see this play itself out in a lot of industries. Probably the automotive industry is the single best example, where the large auto manufacturers are the primary customers for a lot of parts suppliers. And in some ways, those parts suppliers have really become, even though they're independently owned businesses, they've really become captive to one or two or maybe three auto manufacturers. And if you see the decline and what's happened with the auto manufacturers over the last year, that's obviously had a devastating effect on these parts suppliers that have not successfully diversified their customer base and their, you know, the products that they manufacture. So just a simple example of, you know, and the kind of things why we look at this, and it's very pertinent in today's market given the economic conditions.
Agreed. Now, what about two businesses that are generating the same amount of revenue, but one business is a business where there's really little lifetime value of the customer? So they get a lot of customers, but they solve that customer's need, and the customer no longer needs them, versus a different business that has the same revenues that has a small fraction of number of customers, but customers pay them month after month after month. How do you assess between those two different types of businesses if you're looking to build a business to eventually sell?
Sure. Well, a installed or recurring customer base is really a different issue than a diversified customer base. But obviously, if you have a lot of repeat customers versus a business, it's what I call, use the term one and done. That would be a more valuable business. And these things ultimately have a common theme that the buyers of businesses are looking for. It's the predictability of future revenues. And the more customers you have, and the more repeat customers you have, the more predictable the future revenue stream is going to be.
And would you suggest that, what would you suggest to a business owner that is in more of a one-and-done business? Is there anything that can be done to move that to more predictable future revenues?
Well, sure. I mean, you can either look to, can you cross-sell things to those one-and-done customers, or perhaps there's all sorts of ways we could do this, or look to diversify the services or products that you offer to have more repeat clientele. And we probably don't have the time to go into all sorts of specific examples, but these are a lot of examples of businesses that have faced that challenge and successfully dealt with it.
Excellent. What about staffing? One of the points that you made on your website, which is, once again, relatively obvious, that if your staffing has high turnover, it's obviously not as exciting to the buyer as if you have a stable staff. So I want you to just maybe expand upon what the entrepreneur or business owner should be doing human resource-wise to get their business in shape to be a good acquisition candidate.
Well, in terms of there's a couple of issues there. One is the first issue when it comes to your people capabilities are that the owner has to become replaceable. And we see this in a lot of businesses where the owner really is the business. And probably a kind of a classic example might be a medical practice where you see this in professional services where the doctor is very well known and he has some unique skills, and that's why the people come to him as patients. So really making yourself replaceable is step one. And then as far as building the expertise of the staff and stabilizing the staff, I mean, there's all sorts of human compensation plans and human resource policies and procedures you can put in place. It really just depends on the size and the nature of the business. Frankly.
But now, having grown a lot of businesses yourself, and any tips for business owners and entrepreneurs on making themselves replaceable? It seems like a very challenging thing to do.
Yeah, well, I think all these issues on exit planning and anticipating selling your business, the number one rule is to be planful. And most of these things we're discussing today can all be done given time. Unfortunately, probably the biggest issue that we frequently face is people that help facilitate business sales. Somebody will come to us, a business owner, and say, "I want to sell my business now." And the person hasn't done any adequate or reasonable planning to prepare themselves for this. And sometimes we have to tell people, we could probably sell your business now, but it would sell for significantly less than if you were willing to wait a year and do the following things to maximize the value of the business. And one of those things typically is making yourself, expendable as the business owner, and or making it clear that you can be expendable.
Got it. And can you really expand upon this plan? If you had, for a typical business, if you had, you're saying that, if you had, were able to wait a year, you can do the following things. What are some of those things besides making yourself replaceable that most business owners and entrepreneurs should be doing to plan for their exit?
Well, this sounds it's convenient to say this. Probably the first thing is to talk to somebody that's an expert and how to prepare yourself to sell your business. And obviously, we can do that at Sunbelt, and there's certainly other people that have that ability as well. But by way of example, specific things would be to when you think from a buyer's perspective, what are they looking for? One is, are the people there to run the business without the owner? this is harder in a real small business, but there's things you can do to prepare for that. You know, documenting, making sure you have the right people, making sure they're properly incented. In some businesses, you might want to go as far as, you know, having some of your key people sign non-competes or have employment contracts. Obviously, you see these things in bigger, more sophisticated businesses. Make sure your books are in order, that you understand your personal financial goals, that the company's performing as well as it can financially. Get rid of any excess expenses that you really don't need that aren't critical to the business. I mean, there's you can go on and on and on. Maybe look at your customer relationships and, trying to expand those and get more customers, tie in your vendors. You know, just generally speaking, I think the best thing to do is try to look at the business through as if you were a prospective buyer and think what would that person be looking for that would make the business attractive.
Got it. Now, what do you think makes a difference between a good and a great business for sale, like when you're looking at when you're at Sunbelt and you're looking at a business owner that says, hey, can you help? I want you to help sell my business. What's the difference between when you're excited saying, hey, this is a good business, and you're really excited saying, this is a great business? What are those the different factors that you would think goes from good to great?
Well, I think a lot, depending on the size of business we're talking about here, but it really gets into the upside potential of the business and what can that business become in the hands of somebody that's qualified and got the right resources to develop the company. Occasionally get into these situations where, more than occasionally, frequently, the entrepreneur has a great idea, starts a business, but it outgrows his or her capability to manage the business, or maybe they don't have adequate capital, whatever the scenario is. And they have a very logical reason for wanting to sell, and that business is going to be able to perform much better in somebody else's hands. That's what really creates
right. A
great transaction. The buyer can buy it at a price where he feels it's still a good value for him, and the seller is getting substantially more than he could make out of the business, and him or herself.
Got it. Now, when planning for your exit, are there any pitfalls that entrepreneurs should be on the lookout for, and also how they can be avoided in terms of if you try to create a business just to sell it? They talk about like flipping businesses. Are there anything that an entrepreneur should be careful about when building a business to sell?
Well, I understand people do build businesses to sell. I think if you decide to do that, you better be very clear in your mind who the likely buyer is or what type of person or company that's going to be. And you should always prepare to operate the business as if you're going to own it long term, because as we've just seen in the last year, market conditions can change and the market can freeze up and people can't get financing, et cetera. So, for somebody that's built their business for the long term and the kind of pitfalls they can run into to try to avoid, this kind of classic things that we usually find as challenges for entrepreneurs are they haven't thought through what they're going to do next. So they get emotionally torn on whether they should sell the business. They haven't done enough financial planning to say, if I walk away from this business, if I can sell it for X dollars after I pay taxes and after I can't run some expenses through the business anymore, am I going to have enough to live on or sustain the lifestyle that I like, that sort of thing. There's a number of kind of constant themes that we try to walk through business owners with when they're anticipating selling their business to make sure this is, in fact, the right thing for them to do at that point.
Got it. So, you're saying, no formal planning and thinking ahead. What other big mistakes do you see entrepreneurs and business owners making? So they come to you to say, hey, we want to sell. Are there any common themes of things that they say, oops, I wish I would have done that better, or you say, hey, I wish you would have done that better?
Oh, and in retrospect, in terms of operation of the business?
Exactly.
Well, I would say certainly maintaining the financial records the company for small businesses is historically is a common problem, and the less integrity there is to the financial information, the more risk there is for a buyer. So that leads to a discounting of purchase price. That's probably, I think, the number one problem with small businesses, you know.
It's just not taking care of that.
Correct. Yeah, it's people get so busy running their business, they neglect that area as long as there's enough cash flowing in the bank, and you know, for them to operate the business, they frequently tend not to pay enough attention to the accounting and that sort of thing.
Excellent. Now, what, you know, I'm the entrepreneur and I'm getting ready to sell my business. What should I have? What are reasonable expectations of how long it would take to sell the business, and how much is needed of me after the sale on average in terms of training a new owner or an earnout, et cetera? You know, what should my expectations be?
Sure. Well, those are really case by case, and they tend to depend on the market. In terms of time to sell your business, you can have businesses. We have businesses sell within a couple of months, and we have businesses that never sell after a couple of years. The key variables tend to be obviously how good is the business? What is the asking price? What's the general economy and the availability of financing? Is the seller willing to help finance part of the sale of the business? How specialized is the business, the location of it, on and on and on. So those are all very important variables that drive the timing. And in terms of staying on after the sale of the business, again, there's just a huge variation in there. The more important, the more critical the owner is to the day-to-day operation of the business, logic would, infer that he's going to have to stay on longer. And the thing that tends to go hand in hand is when the seller is usually providing financing, the person tends to stay involved with the business longer for both to be, because they're more vested in the success of the new owner.
Got it. Okay, excellent. And as I start to wrap things up, what should, the entrepreneurs and business owners that are listening be doing for the next 30 days, 90 days, and/or 1 year to accomplish the ultimate goal of selling their business for much more than it's worth today?
Well, we're in a very unusual time right now, given the economy. And my number one, advice to all business owners is to, maintain liquidity and try to, if you do not have secured sources of financing, to try to get them. And because what you want to avoid, you can have a fine business that gets this caught, downturn economically and gets in a liquidity crunch and doesn't survive it. I beyond that, I think a lot of businesses are slow right now. It's a great time to focus on your infrastructure and things like I talked about, making sure your books are in good order. If you have operations manuals or human resource manuals or procedures to document those properly and make sure they're well done, to work on training your employees, there's ways to. There's a lot of I think in many ways when business is slow, a productive way to spend your time in anticipation of selling your business is to really focus on the infrastructure of the business and try to make it as strong as you can. So when the economy does come back, your business is poised for your growth, and you can point to very specific things that you've done to prepare it for growth.
Excellent. One final question is,
sure.
You've had a lot of success in your career in starting and growing businesses, and what any words of wisdom that you'd like to pass on to other entrepreneurs and business owners regarding how they can be more successful in their careers?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that I would suggest that have worked for me, and think of, I've seen work for a lot of people. Number one is have a plan. Number two is be disciplined
Right.
financially. And number three is really do the right thing by other people. And that's your people that work for you, work with you, your customers. And we have a thing we call core values here in our company, and then our number one core value is the golden rule. And I frequently tell people, I might make mistakes when I'm following the golden rule, but I'm not going to be too far off doing the right thing. And ultimately, in terms of building equity in your business, both financial equity and, you know, goodwill in your business, I think that is the number one most important thing.
Excellent. I think that's extremely helpful, and I appreciate those sure, words of wisdom. I think that something that not only am I going to use and do try to use, but I think that everyone listening could use that as well. So
once again,
John, thank you so much for your time, and I appreciate all your words of wisdom.
Well, my pleasure. I'm glad to be with you today.